This is Srimad Bhagavatam, Prayers of Queen Kunti, First Canto, Chapter 8, text number 34. Others say that the world, being overburdened like a boat at sea, is much aggrieved, and that Brahma, who is your son, prayed for you, and so you have appeared to diminish the trouble. Can you repeat? Others say that the world, being overburdened like a boat at sea, is much aggrieved, and that Brahma, who is your son, prayed for you, and so you have appeared to diminish the trouble. Purport by His Divine Grace A.C. Bhaktivedanta Swami Prabhupada. Brahma, or the first living being born just after the creation, is the direct son of Narayan. Narayan, as Garbhadakshay Vishnu, first of all entered the material universe. Without a spiritual contact, matter cannot create. This principle was followed from the very beginning of the creation. The Supreme Spirit entered the universe, and the first living being, Brahma, was born on a lotus flower grown out of the transcendental abdomen of Vishnu. Vishnu is therefore known as Padmanabha. Nabha means the navel, lotus navel. Brahma is known as Atmabhu because he was begotten directly from the father without any contact of mother, Lakshmiji. Lakshmiji was present near Narayan, engaged in the service of the Lord, and still without any contact with Lakshmiji, Narayan begot Brahma. That is the omnipotency of the Lord. Omnipotency, that means unlimited potency. Interesting word. Omni means everywhere or something. So there's omnipotent, omniscient means knowing everything. Omnipotent starts with om. Om, omnipotent, omniscient. There's a few other ones. One who foolishly considers Narayan to be like other living beings should take a lesson from this. Narayana is not an ordinary living being. He is the personality of Godhead himself, and he has all the potencies of all the senses in all parts of his transcendental body. That's what we pray every morning. Ankani yasya sakalindriya vrittimanti pasyanti panti kalayanti charam chadanti andantarasta paramanu chayantarastam govindamari purusham tamaham bhajami. That any one of his senses can do the work of any other senses. So like when we offer the bhoga to Krishna, he can eat just by seeing it. He can eat just by hearing the prayers. He can also eat by eating it and put it back so that it doesn't, we don't know that we can't see that anything happened. And occasionally he eats it and doesn't put it back. But that only happens at a very advanced point. But so that any one of his senses, and that the cowherd boys and the gopis would pray that all of their senses would become eyes so they could see Krishna more, because he's so beautiful. They wanted to see him more and more, and they want to have everything become eyes. Narayan is not bound to any ordinary condition of energy. He is complete and independent of to do anything and everything by his various potencies. Very easily and perfectly. Brahma is therefore directly the son of the father and was not put into the womb of a mother. Therefore he is known as Atmabhu. this Brahma is in charge of further creations in the universe, secondarily reflected by the potency of the Omnipotent. Within the halo of the universe, there is a transcendental planet known as Swetadvipa, which is the abode of Chirodakshaya Vishnu, the Paramatma feature of the Lord. Whenever there is trouble in the universe that cannot be solved by the administrative demigod, they approach Brahmaji for a solution. And if it's not to be solved even by Brahmaji, then Brahmaji consults and prays to the Chirodakshaya Vishnu for any incarnation and solution to the problem. Such a problem arose when Krishna and others were ruling over the earth, and the earth became too much overburdened by the misdeeds of the asuras. Brahmaji, along with other demigods, prayed at the shore of the Chirodak ocean, and they were advised of the descent of Krishna as the son of Vasudeva and Devaki. So some people say that the Lord appeared because of the prayers of Brahmaji. Om Gana Timirandasya Ganandana Shalakaya Chakturu Militanyena Tasmai Shri Gurave Namaha Shri Chaitanya Manovishtam Stapitam Yena Bhutale Swayam Rupa Karamayaham Dadari Swaparantikam Vandeham Shri Guru Shri Yuta Parakamam Shri Gurun Vaishnavamscha Shri Rupam Sajajatam Sahagana Raghunatan Vitam Tam Sajivam Sadvetam Savarutam Parijana Sahitaha Krishna Chaitanya Devam Vancha Kalpataruvyascha Kripa Sindhuvyevacha Patitanam Pavanebhyo Vaishnavebhyo Namaha Namo Mahavaranaya Krishna Prema Pradayate Krishnaya Krishna Chaitanya Namani Gora Tishnama Tapta Kanchana Gorangi Radhe Vrindavanishri Vishabhanu Sute Devi Pranamami. And Yasyaika Nishvita Tapta Kalam Tavishesha, that Narayan or Mahavishnu, Vishnur Mahan, is Kala Vishesha. He's a portion of a portion of Krishna. And that's the Karnadakshaya Vishnu, that from his pores is coming out all the universes, where then he enters within each universe is the Garbhadakshaya Vishnu. And Balaram is the first expansion of Krishna, and Balaram expands as a Chaturvyuha in the spiritual world, and there's another expansion in the material world, and then there's the Karnadakshaya Vishnu, the causal Vishnu, and then there's Garbhadakshaya Vishnu. So it's far removed from Krishna that many people, they don't understand that Krishna is a source because he's far removed. They can't see beyond. Well, now materialists and scientists, they can't see beyond their eyelids practically. They can only see the material energy, so they're trying to see it more and more. And they're thinking they're going to find the material thing that all the material energy came from. Either it's an explosion or a small particle or something. So they're not going to find it by their own research, by their own whatever they're doing. They make so many efforts. But we can take a lesson here that we are constantly faced with problems that we can't solve. It's like practically that's our whole life. Everything is a problem that we can't solve. And even the things we think we can solve actually depend completely on Krishna. Even though we may do it without praying to Krishna and think that we did it. Only by Krishna's grace can we even move our finger. So the devotee will pray to Krishna for every little thing, everything he's going to do. And that depend on Krishna all the time. And then when we have, whatever problems we think we have, we should pray to Krishna. And we should pray to Krishna. They don't go and pray, Krishna, give me this, give me that. They just say, help us. Because usually the demons are defeating them. For some reason the demons have maybe been more tapasya, or they're more lusty and they become more powerful than the demigods. And then they pray and then they're always saved by Krishna. One way or another, Vishnu incarnates and helps them because they're his devotees, because they depend on him. If we're not trying to depend on Krishna, then he's not going to help us either, because he gives everybody exactly what they want. Right? So if we're thinking, I can do this by myself, then we have to do it by ourselves. And then it's a struggle. Even if it's an easy thing, it's difficult. So we see devotees that if they're not chanting japa, they're not reading, then even their work isn't very much. But they get, it's too much, I can't do it. Then they leave the temple and work 10 times harder outside. Because outside, you can't goof off very much, And if you can't just say, I'm not coming to work today, my wife wants to talk to me today, and I'm sorry, but I can't do my service. Right? In the temple, you can get away with a lot for some time. But then Krishna will, make them go away. They'll think, no, there's something much better somewhere else. And when we're struggling for material existence, of course you have to work, because otherwise you turn off the electricity, they take away your car, they take away your house. And if you borrowed from someone other than the bank, they may come and kill you. Burn down your house, or they do all kinds of things. Some people that, their credit is so bad they have to borrow from criminals. So better to depend on Krishna. Now all of these reasons that Kunti is giving are correct. But then at the end she says, to revive bhakti, to revive hearing and chanting and devotional service. That Krishna is behind all these other reasons. Krishna does everything according to his own will, but he arranges all these things. So like when the time of Hiranyakasipu, the demigods, they were so distressed, and then Vishnu said, yes, I know, and I'll take care of it when I feel like it, when I'm ready. Just be patient. And then the demigods become confident. A devotee, one symptom of surrender is that we should always expect the mercy of the Lord. Instead of thinking, oh my God, when is Krishna, when is he going to give me what I want? And then a very advanced devotee sees everything as the mercy of the Lord, whatever it is, whether it looks good or looks bad. Satchinandan Swami was telling us what he learned from his grandmother. When she was dying, he was a young boy and he went to her. She said, when I'm living and everything is nice, I'm at the right hand of God, and when I'm dying, I'm at the left hand of God. And that's always with God. And so when we forget Krishna, then we're behind him and we don't, that's the material world, that's the Maya. If we turn our back on Krishna, but Krishna's always there, but we may be behind Krishna and we don't see him. But like Krishna says, everyone walks on my path. So some will take that no matter what we're doing, you're going to Krishna. You're going to heaven or the spiritual world, whatever they call it. It doesn't matter what you do, but that's not what it means. It means, just like in prison, that also belongs to the government. You're still in the government. You're still under the control, but it's different than the law-abiding citizen's living is much different than the person in the prison. But they're both under the shelter of the government. When we follow the laws and we live properly, then the government will help. And we have roads, and we have police, and we have electricity, and all these things that the government is, you know, taking care of. In the prison, they have also food, right? And they have shelter. They have some work. Sometimes they get paid $1 a day or something. You know, they have some clothes. But it's prison, David. You can't leave. You do what they want when they want. But they're still under the government. So in the material world, and in the prison, they start to think, yeah, this is my place. You know, I'm in charge here. Sometimes they do get within the prisoners, somebody's a big man, somebody's a small man, somebody's getting money from outside, somebody has influence to get, you know, more cigarettes or something. And they start to enjoy that. So in the material world, Prabhupada gave that example, it's like a prison house. But we're thinking it's very nice. We don't realize you're in prison. That's why it's a super good prison house. That one cannot get out by just trying to escape the suffering. The efforts that we make materially to try to avoid suffering just create more suffering. And Prabhupada gave crude examples which are much more prominent now than they were even then, like the, you know, the traffic jams and the pollution and, you know, in Delhi, I think Delhi has more cars than Bombay and Calcutta combined or something.
But that is more pollution.
It has like 1,500 new cars a day or something. So they're, you know, they try to build a few new roads or something, but there's no way they can keep up. And that every big city you go to, it's like that. You know, they're getting rich and more new cars are coming, you know. But then you can't drive them. You just have to sit in the traffic and breathe pollution. And they think the air conditioning is, you know, making it nice, because I heard an example one time, and it was a stupid one when I was a kid, but the university, the coach of the, I think the baseball team and the hockey team were arguing, or, you know, which team is better or something. They were on the radio. And so that the one in the baseball that summer, you know, he said, well, garbage doesn't stink in the winter. You know, you can put the garbage in the winter, it's frozen, it doesn't smell. But in the summer, so the garbage collectors, when they go on strike, it's always in the summer. They never go on strike in the winter because nobody would care that much. But in the summer, after 1 week, when that stinking garbage, they'll just give them whatever, any money, anything they want, holidays, anything, just pick it up, you know, just get it out of there. So, you know, we get bewildered. We're thinking this material world is nice. It's covered over. The illusory energy, you know, makes everyone bewildered, thinking, always thinking it can enjoy. But whatever we try to do, like if you go to the doctor, they generally give maybe three different pills. Now, many times, the first one is for whatever sickness you have. But every medicine they have has a side effect, mostly. So they give another one just to counteract the first one, and sometimes more. Or in Japan, they just give 9 or 10 things just to make people think that, you know, they're really getting something. They see the doctor for 1 minute, they get a big bag of pills, and they go home. So, you know, what you're doing may be more trouble. Although people think, no, I've got it together, I got it nice, you know, I have my pension fund, and I have, you know, and, you know, materially maybe it seems nice, but there's no real insurance until we take shelter of Krishna. And many foolish people think that, you know, if you take shelter of Krishna, then you have to live, you know, like some naked renunciate somewhere. But that's not the case either. We just have to understand that renunciation doesn't mean you give away everything, you don't have anything. It means you know that everything belongs to Krishna. I remember when I first joined, I didn't have anything, and whatever I had, I gave right away. But some devotees, you know, after they would come, and then you're talking to them, and they'd say, well, I had a car, and I had a lot of money, and what did you do with it? Well, I said, I gave it to my brother, I gave it. Because they heard you have to give up everything, you know, when they came to the temple. So they went home and gave up everything, and then came and moved in the temple. They didn't understand it, give it to Krishna. So that was good. They renounced everything and they didn't care about it. But that's not, you know, better to maybe keep it but use it for Krishna. But in those days it was good to just get rid of everything and just join up, join the army. You know, when you join the army you don't take anything with you, you just go. They give you some clothes, they give you, you know, food, they give you everything. You don't bring your television and your everything with you. And when you go to war, they give you them back. They give you what, you know, what you have. And that's it. You might have a couple books you can have or something, you know, you can bring your Bhagavad Gita, but especially when you first go. So, you know, we have to have some life where we have to give up things. But these are misery, these are things that cause suffering. We have to give up. Illicit sex, it seems like pleasure. But in the world there's so much concern about unwanted pregnancies. Right? America has the most teenage pregnancies, unmarried girls, which is a big problem. The girl, you know, is happy to have a baby for a little while, then she gets tired of it because she's a teenager and she's not married. And the government has to support them and they're running out of money and there's so much disease and the diseases that they call STD diseases, you know, sexually transmitted diseases, they just get more and more virulent, more powerful, more devastating, AIDS, right? I don't hear about it in America so much anymore. So many people are dying, although malaria is worse. But then it's kind of exciting, the mosquitoes, and compared to sex and drugs, you know, it's more interesting. And when someone's dying from AIDS in the hospital, it costs the government, you know, $50,000 or something, depending on, you know, what kind of difference, because they keep trying to patch up all the things that go wrong with them. In Africa, it's, you know, devastating so many people, except the one business is flourishing, you know. The coffin maker, they're doing really good. Business is booming. But then many families have so many people dying they can't even afford the funerals, can't afford to buy it. Even in America, the funerals become so expensive that many people they can't afford. They just get a cardboard box and cremation. Which is practical. This stupid idea of putting a dead body in a very fancy box, right? Pretty stupid. So much. Of course, somebody makes money making the boxes. But, and they're very, you know, it's a material world, they're very tricky. And my aunt, my uncle died very suddenly, just died without any warning, just had a heart attack. Never sick. I don't remember that he was ever sick. And I never heard of him being sick. All of a sudden he died. Just, he was walking across. So naturally the wife is very distressed, right? And even if she has house and life insurance and she has a house, and still it's devastating. And so she ordered the cheapest funeral. So the funeral business people said, oh, don't you love your husband? Oh, you didn't love your husband? And then she, you know, take the expensive one. And then spend all the money. Some people, their whole, they spend everything on the funeral. These people know, when I was in school, I was looking at the university, all the classes, you know. So they had a few, what was it? Some kind of psychology to do with, you know, people whose family or somebody just died. And I was thinking that must be to help them. But actually, in the business sense, it's how to get them to buy the most expensive funeral, you know, when they're bereaved and distressed and take advantage of their suffering. But this is the material world, you know, it's just, they just create more and more things which are supposed to be like honoring the dead, right? But it doesn't, you know. Of course, and then people are so stupid, they're thinking of the body, like in Tennessee we had a interfaith. So the one guy from one of the religions was saying that you get put in the box and you get buried, and then God or whoever it is shows you, like, if you're going to go to hell or you're going to go to heaven. Then you have to wait until the judgment day, and nobody has any idea when that is. You know, wow. You know, who would want, I don't know why anybody would want to be in that religion. It's one of the fastest growing ones. Because they promised you can enjoy before you die. But, we know that judgment day is constant. You know, we're always having to make decisions, and then we have to suffer the consequences. And then at the time, so we're getting knocked around, put into different circumstances, you know, by our karma and our decisions. And at the time of death, then it's a bigger change. But it's just another change. They don't want to think about that. Then they try to ask him, well, how can God be merciful if he'll send you to hell and that's it, you never get out? There's no chance. They can't explain that either. Then the one guy tried to say, well, actually, hardly anybody will go to hell. Sin is, you know, it's almost impossible to sin anything. In hell must be almost nobody there. Everybody goes to heaven. And that's the big preacher, so then the people in the church are thinking, well, you know. Of course, you have to give your donations to go to heaven, maybe. So we're very fortunate to have so much understanding of everything from Srimad Bhagavatam, but then we have to be careful, because sometimes we become puffed up that we know so much. Then we're not really humble and not really faithful in Krishna, we're just thinking, I know so much, and these people don't know anything. Some of those people that don't know very much, they're very faithful. They have tremendous faith in God. Even though they're asking him for material things, they have great faith that he's going to give it. And they get material things, but they don't realize that when you get the material things, you don't get Krishna. People can chant Hare Krishna for material gain also. But they're not going to get Krishna. That's offensive chanting, and they'll go on. One can go on chanting for millions of lifetimes. You can be chanting. It's an offense to, you know, to chant without complete faith or to maintain material desires even after hearing so much. And it said that's a very serious offense. That's the tenth offense. You know. And that's why if we're chanting but we're not experiencing, you know, all the things that we read about, and it's not because of chanting, there's something wrong with chanting, it's because we're maintaining material desires, we're carrying on different offenses. Vaishnava aparad is requires an effort, because in Kunti said in one of these prayers that the dissensions between human beings are due to social intercourse. So we see in the temple even that we're social intercourse, we bump into each other. Someone may take your sweet ball. There's a story one time, Tamal Krishna Maharaj was paying obeisances and one devotee took his sweet ball and ate it. So he complained to Prabhupada. He took my sweet ball. Prabhupada said, well, it's good that he got ate it, you know. It's good for you to give it, you know. But, you know, that's a minor thing, but things happen, you know. Because it's just impossible not to step on somebody's toes once in a while. So we have to try to serve devotees, we have to try to honor devotees, glorify devotees, and avoid, you know, criticizing. It's very easy when we sit to talk casually to start criticizing each other. It's natural. It's everybody does, right? That's what the newspaper is full of. Criticism. I don't see many newspapers in America. In Africa and India is the most. It's always the front page, all about critical, you know, political intrigues and corruption. And in America also, they just, these presidential, one guy wrote that if anybody in another country would witness this American presidential campaign, they would never want to be democratic, you know, democracy. Demon crazy, probably. Even I went in one shop in Indonesia and the television was on and the show was called Demo Crazy. And it was obviously they were making a joke of the government. You know, that I don't know the government, but that they were dressed up and they were in the courtroom and, you know, they were... Yeah. And they have one in Thailand where they have puppets of all the, you know, the political leaders doing, you know, all kinds of stupid things. But they're not actors, they're like puppets, you know. But they, anyone that knows them would know who it is. Demo crazy. And then they have an election, and America is, I don't know, we can't follow other ones. In Indonesia, that one guy was the president for 50 years. But, and there would be campaigns for different people. They're all the same campaigners driving around waving flags. One day for one guy. But in the bottom line, there was only one candidate. He would always win. In Russia, they had elections. They had one candidate, and then they had a somebody, an officer in every town. Everyone had to vote. And then he would win, and then they would say he won by absolute majority. Everyone voted for him. He's very popular. You have no choice. But here we, you know, they just criticize. Within one party, they criticize and criticize to get the nomination. Then they have to back up, you know, then they have to say, well, now I'm really behind this one. And then the two parties criticize each other. You know, they try to dig, they even go and find out, like, what he did in high school, or, you know, he did something bad, or... And the Time magazine or something, one week we'll have an article about what a good guy is, and next week they'll say how bad he is. And they have to have variety. They have to keep selling the newspapers and getting people to watch the television. They have to keep saying, oh, it's very close, you know, today so-and-so's ahead, tomorrow the other one's ahead, yesterday the other one's ahead. You know, it's a close race, and people, then they get excited, like, but demon crazy. But like in this day and age, no one is qualified to be a king and have a, and they, even in America, that George Washington, they wanted him to be the king. That's all they knew. But he said no, and he made that thing about only two terms, because somehow he had vision of, you know, because they were rebelling against the kings already. Then they thought, oh, this is a good guy, make him the king. But he knew what, you know, what could happen. So at least nobody can stay in office too long, you know, in most countries. But really, they're not in power. Ultimately, Durga is in power of everything. So for all our, we can't change the government, we can't, you know, we could vote, but, you know, my mother even used to tell me, and she voted every time. She said, it's the less of two evils. I'm voting for this guy because he's not as bad as that guy. And for Kennedy, you heard of him?
Yeah.
He's so handsome. So he won because all the women voted for him. He got, because the other guy was very ugly, actually, and unattractive. So. And then they found out later that he had a different girlfriend every day, and, you know, because he was very good looking, very rich, completely charming. So all the women liked him. as a president, who can judge, because everything is crazy. We can just see that no matter what they do, they pass so many laws. I saw the number of new laws that are passed in America, new taxes and new everything. But there's more people in the prison. America has, is it more people in prison than any other country? Or at least the highest percentage of population in prison of any country. Wonderful. But why everybody wants to come to America? From anywhere in the world they want to get, right? People join us, come just because they think they can get to America. At least they used to. And sometimes devotees are promising that. Yes, you can, if you become our life member, you can come to America, we'll pick you up in a Cadillac, and well, you can stay in our Hilton Hotel guest house. You'll have hundreds of servants. And people are attracted. But we want to go anywhere to preach and serve Krishna, then it's good, you can go anywhere. And then we find out that everywhere is, you know, not that much difference. Many different languages, there may be different, you know, basic food, they may have different names on the supermarkets, you know, maybe a little bit different kind of cars, not much. Maybe drive on the right side, you drive on this side, maybe you drive on either side. There's one Indian man now that's a big race driver in America. And they ask him, which side of the road do you drive on in your country? He said, well, there's no rule. You drive in the middle, basically. And then you swerve off whenever you have to, because the side is not so good sometimes. So you can't, Prabhupada said, you know, if you come to England, you can't say, well, I'm from my country, we drive on this side, so I'm going to do that. You have to do what they do. So we want to find out God's laws, and we want to, the main thing we have to do is constantly pray to Krishna by chanting the holy name. And the devotee really has nothing to ask from Krishna than more chanting and wanting to make other people chant. Like in the Bhaktivinoda Thakur, in that Kabe Habe Bolo Sedi Nama Aparada Gucci Shudanama Ruchi Kripa Bolo Abhe Vidoye Sancha. When will that day be mine? When will I chant? You know, with offenses ceasing and taste increasing, when will I get that mercy? Then he has one, Kabe Nichananda Mori Gori Doya Charaibe More Vishaya Ramaya. When will I get out of Maya by the grace of Lord Nichananda? Tiya More Nicha Sharanyada Chaya. Then when if I can get the shelter of the lotus feet of Lord Nichananda, then Name Rahatete Dibayarika. Then I can enter into the marketplace of the holy name and distribute the holy name. That's what we want to do no matter where we go. Prabhupada wanted to go to America, and his son, the one that Prabhupada said was a demon, when Prabhupada left, he made a lawsuit against ISKCON. Everything belonged to him. All the temples, all the books, all the money, everything there was in ISKCON actually should belong to him, because he was the son. And so, you know, he was, and he wrote a very long paper blaspheming Prabhupada. And he said he went to America, you know, for selling his books to get rich, you know, he's a businessman. And he collected lots of gopis there, really nasty stuff. And he didn't win, of course, but he managed to cause, you know, a lot of headache for us. And Prabhupada had given him in the will something already. But when he made the lawsuit, he didn't get that, so he ended up getting less. He would have got more if he just kept quiet. But he tried for everything. he was saying that Prabhupada, you know, didn't really take sannyas, because he didn't take sannyas directly from Bhaktisiddhanta. He said Prabhupada wasn't a real sannyasi, so therefore everything belongs to the son. Because in Indian law, still, the sannyasi is legally dead, so he's not obliged to any of his, legally, to the family and debts or whatever. And so nowadays people may take sannyas just for that reason, for not for preaching. So that kind of sannyas is condemned. But sannyas for preaching, going anywhere for preaching, having a big temple or a nice car, for actually preaching is all good. Prabhupada said his Guru Maharaj introduced this, that one can live in a palatial building and drive a nice car and become a great devotee. But we also have to be careful not to become attached to those things and think, now, this is mine. You know, if we preach, there'll be people honoring us and people wanting to give us things and people wanting to render service. And one has to be careful. Money is, the people misquote the Bible, they say money is the root of all evil. But actually it doesn't say that, it says that attachment to money is the root of all evil. Money itself is not bad. Nothing is good or bad itself. A knife is, if the doctor has the knife, or you have the knife in the kitchen and you're cutting up the vegetables to cook for Krishna, the knife is very nice. If someone comes with a knife and stabs you in the back, and it's not very nice. It's not the knife that's good or bad, it's the use of it. It's not this material body is not necessarily good or bad, it's the material energy. It's a bad bargain, we can call it that, but it's how we use it. If we use it for serving Krishna, then fine. If we use money for serving Krishna, the more the better. Prabhupada had no aversion to money. He would be happy that we're spending so much money, we're selling so many books. And, you know, he would brag how much money he was spending in America. But he didn't want anybody wasting money. And the Bhagavatam says that, you know, what one gains from serving Krishna should never be used for sense gratification. So you have to be careful. We gain a lot of knowledge, and if we become puffed up and go out and become a professional Bhagavat reciter or something, then that would be very bad. Or a professional singer. There's people chanting Hare Krishna getting big, big money for it. Devotees are chanting much nicer all over the place. They don't get anything. But they're getting Krishna. Those people that are chanting the Maha Mantra but just get for money, then they don't get Krishna. They get followers, they get admirers, they get famous, but they don't get Krishna. They won't be happy. So if we just really, you know, take that seriously, chant the holy name for Krishna's pleasure, dressing a deity, it's for Krishna's pleasure. Cooking, it's for Krishna's pleasure. Everybody's cooking, everyone's eating, everyone is dressing, everyone is cleaning their house, building a nice house. You know, people are building, one man in Bombay is building a house now for, what is it, $1.5 billion. What is it, 37-floor house. And each room is, you know, better than any temple of Krishna in the world right now. But I'm sure he's not very happy, and he'll be much more unhappy. And he'll have to have an army outside the house. Probably on every floor have an army, you know, armed guards. But he's thinking he's a great man. He wants people, everybody will know it's his house because there's nothing else around us anywhere near that big. So people are building for themselves. That's Maya. But if they're building a temple for Krishna, then that's very good. So we'll pray that these people can somehow or other, you know, get inspired, because the temple for Krishna provides facility for people to gather together and chant the holy name, to hear the Srimad Bhagavatam, to get prasadam. That's what it's for. it's for that purpose. We're meant to be, you know, finding ways and means to bring more and more people to the temple. Not to make people go away from the temple, but to bring more and more people to get to get Krishna, to get the chance to serve Krishna, taking prasadam and serving Krishna even if they just come for that. Chanting the holy name, we want to give everybody the holy name, give everybody books. People coming, they're all looking for Krishna. Yesterday one guest was asking, you know, what can I do? When I told him, you know, you can work, you know, it's not that, but if you're just working, you don't know why you're working, and you're getting paid quite a bit, but, you know, then it's not the work that you don't like, but it's that it's not going anywhere. And one devotee in Japan was saying, I hate my job, but he had a very high paying job. He was giving a lot to the temple, and, you know, able to go to India every year with the whole family. And I said, you should love your job, you know, because why, you have to do it. It's your karma. Like Krishna told Arjuna, you got to fight anyway, so you might as well fight now. You're a Kshatriya. So you're going to have to work anyway. Why should you hate it? You know. Sometimes we think, well, that means I'm really spiritual. I don't like my job. But, you should like it because it gives us the facility to serve Krishna. And they say that find a job you like and then you won't have to work. The same thing with service. Prabhupada encouraged people, what do you want to do for Krishna? Find the service you like and then do it. Then we can more and more enthusiastic and do it more and more and more. You know, for the pleasure of Krishna. That's why we're doing it. All right, thank you very much. And the deities are looking very beautiful. Krishna is always beautiful, but he lets us decorate him and
the idea is that, you know,
more and more people will come to the temple and see the deity and become charmed by the beauty of the deity and gradually lose their appreciation for the beauty of the material world, which is a small spark of Krishna's splendor. But, you know, it's very easy to become bewildered and look, oh, that's so beautiful, so nice, right? But it's always temporary changing. Nothing is really beautiful. All right, thank you very much. Any question or anything? Welcome. Srimad Bhagavatam ki jai. Srila Prabhupada ki jai.